Hello guys, and welcome to a new episode of Korea Startup Podcast. In today's episode, we're going to have a masterclass on successful job applications. We invited Gordon Dudley, who is the CEO of RDI Worldwide, Korea's number one talent attraction agency. Gordon knows really well what companies look at in a job application, what they prefer to see in a CV, how they want people to interact in an interview. So he's going to share all his secrets and tips for applicants to have successful applications. Apart from that, he's going to share how he thinks the AI and ChatGPT is going to affect the human resources world in the future. And also, we're going to talk about some Korean new trends in the workforce and company culture. I really hope you enjoy.
Hello, guys, to the 15th episode of Korea Startup Podcast. Today, we are with our co-host, Laida.
Hello.
And with Gordon Dudley. Hello, Gordon.
Hi there.
How are you?
Very good. Thank you for the invitation.
Thank you for coming. So today we are going to talk about human resources. He's an expert on this, and you can start maybe introducing yourself and a bit your background.
Sure. So my name is Gordon Dudley. I'm originally from the UK, and I run RDI Worldwide here in Seoul, Korea, which is a talent attraction agency. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to telling you a little bit more about it.
Sure. So before coming into your company, what were you doing before you started this company? What were you working on?
So I spent about 10 years working for large multinational companies before I set up my business. I was working in London and New York and Frankfurt, mm-hmm. and also in Seoul. And I was pretty much working in kind of commercial kind of roles, which, you know, was a lot of marketing, global strategy, business development, that kind of thing was what I focused on before mm-hmm. when I was working for big companies.
Was also related to sales, your positions?
Not so much direct sales, more at one point I was like a key account manager. So I was responsible for a sports apparel brand's imports into the UK. So I was kind of responsible for that account. That was one big part that I had. But I was always in such a large organization that I was never frontline sales.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I heard that like customer attraction and recruitment is really related to sales somehow. Do you think it's related? Do you think it's very different?
I think that is an outdated perception that that recruitment is sales. I think that if you have a kind of Wolf on Wall Street or boiler room type of image where, you know, recruiters call up candidates and they're trying to close them on a position, whether it's in that case it's stocks, but in this case recruiting, I don't think that is the way that works really effectively anymore, though it might have been the case in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense. And you were working in this big company. Why did you decide to change your whole career suddenly and move to Seoul?
Right. I mean, definitely one of the kind of things that I was always looking for in my career is a global element. That's why I moved my country. I changed my location a few times. In terms of actually setting up my company, it was really specifically around HR. And my experience of working in Korea for a Korean company and seeing that all the people around me were working for like one of the best companies in the country, like, you know, accepted as one of the top ranking companies. Mm-hmm. Pay was good, benefits were good, offices were very nice, but not a lot of people were actually happy in their work. If they had the chance to leave, they would, but they were in situations where they could not. And so I thought, there's just got to be a better way. I've always enjoyed my work, in previous companies, previous jobs, I'd always enjoyed and then chosen what I wanted to do next. And I'd moved on. And I just felt that more people should be able to feel like work is something that they want to do and that they want to, you know, get out of bed and go to work.
Motivated, yeah.
By their own motivation, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And I know, because you recorded some videos and you shared this experience before, that you were in a critical position when you were deciding whether or not to start your own company, because it's a risky decision, especially when you have children. That was your case. You had a child, right?
Yep.
So how was the process of deciding that, and how did you manage it?
You're absolutely right. I was a foreigner in a country where there are very, very few foreigners. I was married just a couple of years, had our first child on the way. Cool. We were also moving house. You know, maybe that's the worst possible time to leave a big stable company, corporate job, and start doing my own thing. But I actually, in my mind, I was thinking, well, if I have this dream that I want to run my own business, and if I wait any longer, I'm probably never going to do it. So it became almost like a now or never kind of decision. That still, yeah, that was now or never. I still wanted to make the right decision. So I did have some period of time when I fully investigated whether I could set up the business, what it would take, the actual kind of literal technical steps to set up a business in Korea, and looked into it in order to then be able to confidently make the decision, yes, I can resign from my company job and start this.
Mm-hmm. And you did a really nice dynamic. I found it really interesting that you put like in a book or something, 150 numbers, no? And each day you were taking out one of the pages to feel that you are running out of time and you have a deadline.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, when you're working in a company and you have a boss, mm-hmm. Most of the time you are being told what the work you have to do is. Maybe you have some flexibility to choose how you do it, et cetera, but pretty much your work R&R and scope is defined. And so for the first time, I had just a blank canvas. I had a period of time. I could do whatever I want. You know, I could stay in bed till lunch if I wanted. I could fill my time with meetings. I could fill my time with internet research. I literally had totally open scope. And so I realized I've got to use this time, this relatively limited time, which was 150 days, to get the most out of it, to really decide confidently whether I can start my business or not. And so that's what I did. I put, it was on a calendar, like a desk calendar, 1 to 150, and I did it in reverse. Mm. So I was constantly reminded every day, I turned over, okay, I've got 149 days left. Okay, I've got 148 days left. Like, at least every day, I get a step closer to being able to make that decision and making sure I use my time effectively.
What were the things that needed to be established in order to say, like, yes, is the moment to find a company in that time?
Indicators.
Yeah, I mean, so you can almost build a list as long as you like, mm-hmm. because you can be as risk averse as you like. One thing I was trying to calculate was, how long it was going to take us to get our first revenue. How long it's going to take to kind of like launch, get a customer, and get paid. Mm-hmm. Because obviously that was going to be a critical gap. I then just looked at the literal fundamentals of what paperwork permissions and things I need to submit to set up a business in Korea. So, and how long does that take? How much does that cost? And I also did a bit of a competitor analysis of what's currently out there, what do people currently offer, and what's maybe missing, or what could we do better? Those were the main factors that I looked at, and then on top of that, maybe some costings around. Okay, so if we have an office, how much is that going to cost? If we, some other like budget kind of constraints as well.
And was the first idea that you had in mind the final idea, or did you change a lot during those 150 days?
So within the 150 days, I didn't change, because I didn't start with. I didn't start with
like customer feedback or things like that.
Yeah, I didn't start with a fixed idea. That was the process to find out what was going to be best.
Okay.
So that was important to
was
narrow
really
down.
Nice. Yeah.
But what has happened over the last 7 years of running the business is that we have changed from that original
for sure.
Startup. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow, that's so cool. That's a strategy that many people that are working in a company are trying to maybe move to funding their own company could use. So coming more into the specifics of your company, what's exactly what you do and to who? What are your customers?
So we help global companies in Korea to find talents that are bilingual. So where there is a need for English within that global company, we help them to attract and hire those people in Korea. Mm-hmm. Our clients are typically kind of either not having a presence in Korea and they want to establish. So they are coming to Korea for the first time and they need to have somebody on the ground to start the business. So we help companies in that respect. So they are outside of Korea currently. But we also help more companies which are established in Korea and growing, or just they're of a certain size where they don't have enough in-house HR to handle recruiting by themselves. And so they need external specialist support.
That's, I think, one of the main questions that people normally ask themselves. Is it really necessary to outsource the recruitment phase? For which type of companies do you think is more appropriate? Do you think big companies can do it on their own? What are the benefits?
So, you know, if you're Nike, everybody knows Nike, and they are very large. So they have less need for a specialist search service like ours. If you are in a B2B sector where you are not, your brand name is not known to a wide audience, then you have to take a lot longer process to get people to know about your company. If you're in a very small sector with a small number of companies, everybody knows the companies that operate in that sector. It's okay because you hire from that sector to that sector, it's fine. But there are many roles where you can hire from outside the sector, and therefore it's difficult for B2B companies to attract as many talents as they need. Mm-hmm. I think also just rapidly growing, you know, a company that's doubling in size in the next 12 months simply can't handle the capacity within an in-house HR team. And so they look at certain roles which will be more effective and efficient to give to an external support.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess that your pool of candidates is bigger, no, than the people that could apply to a specific job. So you could choose between many different candidates.
Well, that's a really interesting point because when you get applications direct to your company, you're only getting somebody who's actively looking for a job. Like they either are unemployed or soon to be, or they have a reason why they are actively applying for the company. And of course, what we call active candidates is only a very small percentage of the entire talent pool. And so the benefit that we bring, the really biggest benefit, is that we can go out to the 80% of the talent pool, which is so-called passive candidates, people who didn't really think about a new opportunity until we contact them, but are highly qualified. And actually, when presented with this kind of opportunity, are highly motivated to join and to take this new opportunity.
Yeah, that maybe they might be working for another company, but they were just curious and they went to your company, they are there, but they are not really actively looking for other things, no? Oh, well, that's interesting. I didn't think about that point. Mm-hmm. And what inspired you to start this? Well, you mentioned that you were working and you saw that people weren't happy enough. So yeah. How is that process when you identify what the people need and how is the best fit for the company and how do you do it for them to be successful there inside?
Yeah, so I talk to a lot of people in jobs and who are, you know, interested to move, even if they've only just joined the company. And so I'm always kind of curious, why, you've only just joined the company 2 months ago, why are you already thinking about moving? Mm-hmm. And so often the answer is, it's not what I expected. Mm-hmm. I've joined this company, they said it was gonna be this, this, and this, and it's an entirely different thing. And so, and that's a very, you know, outwardly basic kind of thing, that what somebody is told and what they end up being allocated to, that should always be the same.
Yeah.
Because it's what they have agreed and signed a contract to do. And so at the very least, that's what we do. We make sure that exactly what the company is looking for and their highest priority in criteria, we match that and mm-hmm. make sure that everybody who we are presenting to our clients, that the expectation management is perfectly aligned. They know what they're going to be doing and what's expected of them. The company also has clear expectations as well. So sometimes there is a bit of a process that we go through in advance of starting the search with a company to help actually let them understand more about what exactly they need. Mm-hmm. They might not necessarily know what it is that they need. They might think what they need is something which is not necessarily going to achieve what they want it to. So there is, in some cases, that initial process as well. Mm-hmm. Maybe they've been out searching and they've not succeeded. And then we can immediately see, well, it's because of this factor. Yeah. We know that instantly because we have good contact to the market.
Mm-hmm. And how have RDI adapted to the changing of the job needs? Because I think the society now is, like, for example, they move from job to job quite more rapidly than before. And how are you able to adapt to these changes and be updated?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few elements to that. For sure, candidates ask us very early on in the process, what is the work from home policy? Mm. How flexible is the working conditions? And that's because everybody has a unique situation. Somebody doesn't want work from home. Somebody wants entirely work from home, and other people want a mix, whether that's 2 or 3 days a week or 1 or 2 days a month. So that is definitely one thing that people look for. And so we, mirror that with our clients to make sure that if they have it, that's great, and, mm-hmm. and we can communicate that across. Or if they don't have it, then we let them know that, this is going to affect your ability to hire the best talents. The other element is, with more rapid turnover, there is perhaps a perception that, people are leaving because they don't want to work as much or as mm-hmm. hard. I just don't believe that's true. I think people want to work as hard as ever before, arguably maybe even more, but they want to make sure that the work they are doing aligns with their values. Mm-hmm. They, now it's possible to be freely choose your work and the company you work for. There's so much choice out there more than ever before. And so that just gives workers the luxury of picking and choosing more, mm-hmm. and so sometimes it's very easy to know that company and that job will align to me. Sometimes it's not, and sometimes over time it changes. You join a company in a certain life stage, and a couple of years later only, things have changed, mm-hmm. and therefore you are looking for some change. And I think that's perfectly natural. And this almost constant change is not something that's going to go away. It's not temporary. I think we have to learn to adapt with what it is.
Mm-hmm. And which are the things that you believe people value more when applying to a company nowadays? Because I think that's also something that is changing. Now people are going more for remote or flexibility. What are like those three things that you think is trendy right now to search?
It's not one, two, or three things. Mm-hmm. It's
you are more picky than ever, what?
It's freedom to choose.
To choose.
Actually, I was reading the book of 2023 Korean consumer training sites, mm-hmm. and they were saying that the generation MZ, like the youngest generation that are working, they change a lot of like work position in order to like promote themselves and like get higher salaries. And there is even a word that is called like nakala kubedanto or something like this. Yeah, and it's to describe the companies that is like Naver, Kakao, Coupang, and everything.
Okay.
And they refer to this word in order to say like, okay, I want to work in these companies for maybe up to a year,
mm-hmm.
to have like this in my CV,
mm-hmm.
and then they will get any kind of job. Like this is also affecting a lot to the companies in order to attract or like
retain
the talent in mm-hmm. the companies, and they don't know what to do in order to retain the employees.
Yeah, so this is like the Korean equivalent of FANG companies, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is still quite a legacy in Korea of getting kind of like credits on your resume, so-called like spec. And so people try and get more and more specs. You know, it starts with like certificates whilst you are at uni or whilst you are job seeking, doing kind of basic training courses to get more certificates. And in this case, like a brand name. I think the reality is that there's not a lot that you can learn in a year. You certainly can't deliver much within a year. And so I think that people leaving within a year are going to struggle beyond, like, they might, on the back of that 1 year, be able to move to another company, but I don't think it's going to sustain them in their career. So I would believe that this will be a very short-term thing, that to only be there for a year is not really going to help people in their career long-term. So I think that probably within a short space of time, yes, those companies will still be very attractive, but people will stay a little bit longer so they can actually really learn more and give more value, I think.
Mm-hmm. So do you think recruiters don't see that much value in being changing from 1 year, 1 year, 1 year, but they see more value in staying like for a little bit longer because they believe the applicants would learn more?
Yes, I think that, I mean, not all recruiters are the same.
Yeah.
That is for sure. But you know, if I am working with a company that is constantly hiring,
mm-hmm.
first feeling is, oh, they're constantly hiring, they need me, this is more business for me. But they're constantly hiring because there's a problem, and so immediately candidates start asking, why are they always hiring? Why is nobody staying there? So that's the great thing about the labor market, is that it's super fluid. So you really start getting into like some relatively like traditional economic theory of supply and demand, that you know, as soon as you know, people are leaving too much, then the demand goes down. So then people stay longer. Like, you know, it's a direct kind of correlation, because they can't hire so easily. So there's like that direct feedback that's always coming.
Mm-hmm. And coming back to the freedom that you were mentioning before, how is Korean companies in terms of the amount of freedom that they give to their employees compared maybe to other countries from Europe or in the US?
So the freedom of choice.
Yes.
Well, the freedom of choice is to pick and choose companies.
Ah, okay.
So I mean that, and that definitely is true in Korea as well. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the past, the largest Korean companies only, the big chaebols, were almost the only choice for well-educated degree graduates, because they were offering, the only ones offering good salaries, the only ones offering really significant benefits. And that is what has changed, that they are not the only companies offering that. And also, people are not only valuing those things, so they are having more choice through different options from different companies offering different things.
What about startups? Are people now seeking to work in startups more than before?
Increasingly, more and more. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, the startup ecosystem in Korea is very new. It's grown rapidly from a very small base. And, you know, I think also we can't just put all startups in the same category, right? Yeah. I mean, what's the largest startup in Korea? Coupang. It's actually now the second largest employer in the country. So, you know, we can't say that this is the same experience as going to work at a 20-person startup in a co-working space that started 6 months ago, right? So, the more established the company, more well established the startup, of course, the more attractive it is to a wider demographic. Mm-hmm. But I think that the interest in more and more different types of companies, more, you know, potentially challenging environments, is definitely increasing a lot in Korea.
Mm-hmm. One of the other things that you put a lot of emphasis in your LinkedIn is like how important is culture in a company and diversity, no? And how you always try to motivate companies to improve their diversity and bring more people. Do you think that's also changing from the side of the companies? Do you think they are now more open to bring people from outside, from different backgrounds, or is there still a lot of work there?
Sure. I mean, diversity, of course, is a broad topic, and there's many different ways to measure that. You know, we did some work with a very large multinational company here in Korea, who that company's global policy is very cutting edge globally for their policies. But when it came to their Korea branch, they were actually meeting all of the criteria, because for some countries, you know, age, gender are not as important as ethnicity, and so depending on how you measure it, companies can be very good or very bad. I think that definitely in Korea, there has been a very rapid change with regards to diversity in age, mm-hmm. which I think is a good thing. I think that gender diversity is still highly segmented. So there are still very strong gender stereotypes to certain jobs.
Yep.
So if you put a company together, it's 50-50.
That is true, but yeah.
Go down one level, one team is entirely female, one team is entirely male. So that can still be a problem. When it comes to ethnicity, you know, still there are still very few foreigners in Korea. It's still an incredibly homogenous country. The number has increased since COVID, again, because it dropped so rapidly during COVID. And hopefully, you know, there are also signs. There's the talk of this digital nomad visa that will hopefully encourage more people to come in, because, you know, people can freely come and people do, but staying
is so difficult.
Working or running a business, that's another matter.
Yeah, and you mentioned COVID. How was COVID for your company, and how did you manage to survive during that time? Because I guess no one was hiring, no?
Well, so two parts to that question. Nobody was hiring. I'll come to in a minute. Mm-hmm. But for RDI, it was a very, very pivot. Okay, we need to edit that one. COVID for us at RDI was a really pivotal moment. Mm-hmm. We had been running an office-based team. We had been growing steadily over the 3 to 4 years that we'd been going, and we were predominantly doing a lot of training, classroom-based corporate training at the time. And of course, COVID stopped that instantly. No face-to-face training, no international travel. And so that was where we realized that, you know, this is not going to come back anytime soon, mm-hmm. and not to the level that it was. And so that's where we pivoted much more into the recruiting side. Mm-hmm. We realized that this recruiting business is virtual and scalable mm-hmm. and pandemic proof. Because what was interesting, of course, is that there were some sectors through the pandemic that were booming. Mm-hmm. And even when companies are downsizing, they still sometimes have to make strategic hires. And so even in that time, they can still be our client, and we can still help them find certain people. So because our business has clients across so many different sectors, we are very much able to take advantage of the ones which are growing and doing well at certain times, and switch and work with other sectors when they are doing well.
Mm. Yeah, that's great. That's great. And what was like the best example or most successful example that you feel so proud of hiring a person and then it was a complete success? The company was so happy, the person as well. Is there any specific thing that really made you like proud?
I mean, when we see the entire process of introducing someone to a company, them going through the process of interviewing and evaluation, and then joining that company, and then if they are senior leader or country manager, then they are literally responsible for the evolution of that business. So definitely those kind of high-profile roles that we have placed in the past are the most mm-hmm. meaningful for me. If a company is relatively small and is then succeeding after those people have joined, then that definitely makes me really happy.
That's right. And what was the most challenging moment during the whole history of RDA?
The most challenging.
Yeah,
amongst,
most challenging. And
amongst many challenges. I think probably the very hardest thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah.
It was any moment that you were thinking of like just giving up.
Okay. So, I mean, there's been a couple of times when our ethics and morals have been challenged. Mm-hmm. It means like when a client of ours has tried to do some dirty business or bypass some, avoid paying some fee or money. And so those are kind of, maybe everybody experiences these kind of business challenges from time to time. But now, I mean, without doubt, the time when I really thought, can I keep going, was, the quarter two of 2020. So mm-hmm. when COVID was not just... one month thing and then going away, it was just taking over the world. Mm. That was when it was, I really thought for quite a few weeks that this was the end of the business and, I have to start thinking about what other options I have for my career and my life.
But you found it, no? Like, you found the solution.
Yes, we fortunately, and that's I put it down to a few things. I had been working in this HR space for a few years at that point, and I had been advocating to companies that they need to do more professional development, they need to offer more training, they need to develop their people more and more. And the ironic thing was that I, in that time of doing that, I'd neglected myself. Mm-hmm. And so in that kind of like darkest hour, that moment where I really thought, I'm not sure we can go on. We cut everything back. We had no more cash reserves. I couldn't pay myself. That was when I realized that I have nothing else to do. I have no business to, work to do. So the only thing I can do right now is improve myself. And so I actually did two things right away. I took on a coach, like a one-on-one mm-hmm. coach, which was really good for my mental health. Because I was able to just share, offload.
No. Yeah. Yeah.
And get asked some tough questions. And the second thing I did was I invested in a recruitment accelerator program. So that was a program specifically for recruitment agency owners like myself. And that had a 90-day turnaround plan.
Wow.
90 days to bring a six-figure client.
Wow.
And I did it.
Wow.
So, you know, when I had nothing left to give or do, I found this program. And 3 months later, we had a six-figure client on our books. And we...
just kept going, no?
Rebuilt. Wow. We rebuilt from there. Yeah.
That's amazing. I didn't know that there exists like acceleration for this type of companies.
Yeah. I didn't either before.
Like, what do they do?
Rigorous process design and clear strategic planning and integration of some cutting edge tools to help in the recruiting process.
Mm-hmm.
Those three things. Primarily.
And would you say that that process that you were like, that was so, so challenging, was the moment in which you learned the most? Because, you know, everybody says when you are struggling is when you learn the most. But I want to know if that was your case or maybe not.
It's the moment when all of what I had learned became clear as to how I could use it.
Okay.
If I can say like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I had this experience, but I was not using it. I was not leveraging. I was not taking advantage of it. And it's so in a kind of it opened my eyes to what I need to do. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, it's not learning a whole new thing, but it is the application part of it. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
And now this trendy topic that is everywhere, AI, and how AI is going to modify the whole world, is going to take all our jobs. But specifically for human resources, how do you think it's going to affect? Because for me, for example, I was preparing a CV. I wrote everything.
Okay.
And then I was like, it sounds good. I put it in ChatGPT and I was, it sounded horrible. So how now it's going to affect the filtering of companies when saying no or yes to a CV? Of course, you cannot fake your experience, but you can say it in a way that is way more attractive. So there is also this part that you don't really know if that person is writing or who is writing. How is that going to affect the whole business?
Sure. It is a trendy topic. It's one that RDI is also going to be talking about in one of our webinars. Mm-hmm. So I hope we can also have plenty of people to join that.
When is it going to be?
It's going to be Wednesday, April 5th.
Okay. I will put the link in the description. So if whoever want to listen to it, go deeper in this topic.
Sure. We're going to be exploring the effect of ChatGPT on HR. So. Uh-huh. It's going to be a panel discussion, but to your question, I mean, it's clear that we are going into a situation where interviewers get an AI tool to write the questions, and applicants get AI tools to prepare their answers. Of course, the evaluation comes from the authenticity. The evaluation of that authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
I think that writing it in the... So there's always been criticism in the recruiting process and then interviewing process where, the people who just present themselves the best will get the job, or the person who can interview the best will get the job.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, for certain jobs, if somebody does not have the actual required skills, but they're able to cover it up by their interview, that is obviously not good. But the reality, of course, is that in most jobs, communication skills are very important. Mm-hmm. And so somebody having a good presentation skills and interpersonal skills will be an asset to the company. I think that also the ability to present the resume well is also, you know, it shows how motivated they are to apply. If I'm not that motivated to the job, I'll just take whatever resume I have, click send, done. And whether I get it or not, I don't care. So, you know, that is also a point to take into account, that mm-hmm. the more effort that someone has put in to make it as
possible, for that company, no?
Exactly. Mm. Then that is in itself a good sign that this person, is highly motivated for the job. But in terms of writing it better, mm-hmm. It's not changing the achievements of the person.
Yep.
It's really just presenting it in the best possible way. Now, who loses from that? Clearly, there are people who are currently out there getting paid to rewrite resumes because they know how a resume could be better presented. They are going to struggle when people can do it for themselves and more and more. But it is something that we face all the time in the presentation of candidates to clients, is how best do we do that? And there are some absolutely shocking resumes out there of very good or very senior high-level executive candidates who have just absolute disasters of resumes. So,
yeah, wow, that's gonna be curious. And also talking, because I think you have been throwing many advices for the companies to hire and also for the applicants. Mm-hmm. But I want to go deep in that side because I think it's really interesting. So you mentioned that the personalization is really important for the companies. They see that there is an interest. Which are the other things that you see that could be the key for the application before the interview, in the cover letter and in the CV?
From the candidate's perspective?
Yes. What do you think, like, the companies appreciate more or like more in an application? Of course, it would depend from job to job, but in general.
So I also would just finesse that slightly by the companies that are involved in mass hiring mm-hmm. versus sourcing one position. Mm-hmm. If they are doing mass hiring, it's a volume thing. Any exception or anything that goes outside template will just be automatically rejected. You know, they're trying to hire 100 people, they need 1,000 applications, and they will use as many tools as they can to just filter down. So in that case, whatever the prescribed template is, stick to it, use it, and there's very little else you can do. Mm-hmm. But of course, mass hiring is not the majority of hiring, and it's certainly not the kind of hiring that we're involved in. On the one-on-one case, you mentioned it before, actually, with being specific. So if it's clearly been tailored to that particular position, that is going to definitely stand you above the rest. Mm-hmm. I think also, a personal touch can also go a long way. So a thank you letter, a follow-up email, ways in which you, even before the interview, asking questions. You know, if you're working with a recruiter, those questions go through you to the company to get you better prepared. Mm-hmm. These are all things that you can do that will make you stand out.
Mm-hmm. And for this, also I think it depends, because you mentioned that it's different mass hiring than specific hiring, but what do you think, how much time do you think in average a recruiter take to like read a CV and say yes or no?
That is also, it does vary a lot. I mean, the statistics out there say that the average time is not much time at all.
Mm-hmm. It's like 8 seconds or something like that. So I was like, wow.
But, I think that, I can't skim a 9-page resume in 8 seconds. I don't think anybody can, right? So there's that element of it. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that And like we said, a lot of resumes are not well written.
Yeah.
So you don't get the information right away as to what you have to look into more detail. So if you do not spend much time on it, you're probably losing good candidates. But you know, I think that that time that's spent is for an in-house recruiter very different to us as a specialist service. Because for us, we are identifying who we want to reach out to. So we know that they are qualified and the right person. Mm-hmm. And whatever they send us, we will then optimize that. An in-house recruiter, however, is somebody who might be working on a bunch of positions, gets lots of applications, and sometimes, not all by all means, but sometimes might not want to take that much time to really check because they need, you know, they have certain KPIs. They want to just filter down and be able to send those resumes to the hiring manager for them to evaluate. Mm-hmm. So that can be a problem. And that's where sometimes certain filters are used to say, oh, we don't want anybody, it could be something like anybody living, you know, more than 50 kilometers away. Mm-hmm. They might be registered 50 kilometers away, but willing to relocate, but they get excluded just because their address is there. So there's obviously it's always like bogus exceptions that can unfortunately exclude good candidates.
Mm-hmm. And what about some tips for the interview? Because there is always one thing that everybody says, you mm-hmm. have to be extrovert, you cannot be shy in an interview. But I think I wouldn't care if I'm hiring like a person who's going to be the whole day coding. I don't care if he's shy or not. So is that really important to be extrovert and to be like so in an interview?
It definitely depends on the role. Mm. I think that more than energetic or extroverted, I think the most important thing is that you show like authenticity. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people try to put on a performance for an interview, or they try to even memorize.
Over-prepare everything.
Over-prepare, right? Rather than just being themselves. Yeah. Now, maybe they're doing that because they are nervous. Mm. You know, in that case, practice and reduce your nervousness. Or try to anticipate questions. Not that, you can't anticipate all the questions, because if you only rely on those, then you get asked an unprepared question, then you go. So, you know, you have to understand that you can't prepare too much. But to be honest, it's actually the simple things which often are excluding people, which is rather than things that you should do, things that you should not do. Mm-hmm. So if you abide by a lot of the things you should not do, you'll already be in the top tier. Don't be late. Mm-hmm. Don't talk too much. Don't dress inappropriately for the interview and the company's culture, which could be too smart or too casual. Mm-hmm. Don't try to second guess what they are looking for in the answer and just answer it, you know, according to your own personal experience. I think if you do that, you know, these days, interviewers are always trying to look for the evidence. Mm-hmm. They want the examples. Just saying something that is like a textbook answer doesn't get you there. If you can give examples of real experiences that you've had, that's going to be the real tangible evidence that you're qualified for the job and you'll probably pass through the interview.
Mm-hmm. And what are the jobs that you think are struggling the most nowadays to get a job, like the positions, and mm-hmm. also the ones that are everybody is hiring those?
Well, so it's ironic. The ones that are being hired the most are the hardest to get, right? Mm-hmm. They're the most in demand, but that means that the it's not always that there's excess supply for the demand, right? So sometimes the most demanded is the most shortest in supply. Mm-hmm. So that's a kind of like unusual reality of the job market. There is no area of the economy that drives as much requirement for labor as as a tech startup. Mm. You know, a tech startup that goes from 20 to 200 within 6 months. You know, that's just unheard of kind of growth. And then the next level, right? You know, 200 to 2,000 over the next year and a half, perhaps. That's phenomenal growth. I mean, those kind of any job in that area, mm-hmm. is massively in demand. I think also then any job where turnover is acceptable, mm-hmm. will always be quite buoyant, right? So anything that's kind of creative or sales related, or even like customer related, or even strategy related, all those jobs, you have a certain kind of tenure, which diminishes after that period. Mm-hmm. So you go there, you bring your particular creativity to that position, it works for a certain period of time, and you logically then need to move on, right? so that's that kind of turnover is always happening. That churn is always happening in certain areas, and that's known, and that's fine. I think that there's always some specific areas, like country by country, which where certain countries are growing in that area, so depending on what country you're looking at working in. Check which are the industries in that particular moment which are growing well.
Yeah, and do you have any expectation on how is this going to change in the future? Which jobs are going to get more and more important? Which jobs are going to disappear?
Well, I mean, the most obvious answer to that is relating to what we were talking about with AI. You know, there are lists out there which show the highest likelihood of disappearing within the next 10 years because. Computer technology can literally do that job better than a human. Likewise, there are jobs where we can see that it will be incredibly difficult for any technology to take that out, mm-hmm. Or to do that better. So that's definitely a factor. I mean, within my business, there are things which we could automate more, which are at the moment laborious, administrative things. So those are definitely going to diminish over time. We have to think if such prolonged extensive education and more degrees, mm-hmm. Without practical experience, is right going forward in so many areas. You know, the number of people who just get a bachelor's degree as a tick box item and never use it, mm-hmm. They would be better spent getting real experience and training and getting better and also just discovering what they like, right? Mm-hmm. That's also can be quite a difficult process to find what you like and are good at, right? There's mm-hmm. there's the famous kind of Venn diagram, the ikigai, mm-hmm. Where it's the thing that you're good at, the thing which you like, and the thing which the world needs. And if you can find that combination, then that you've got the answer.
Mm-hmm. And to start wrapping up a bit, what are the future plans of RDI? Do you have any like main goal or something, or?
So RDI, we had a tough time through COVID. We now continue to specialize and really, hone in on more and more specialized recruitment, which we feel the more specialized we get, the better we can we can do it. Mm-hmm. So that is one thing, is that we are narrowing down our scope of services. I also would like to hire more people in the future in those specific areas, mm-hmm. You know, real kind of practice leaders who can be like kind of ambassadors of that particular area of the business with that specific market and sector knowledge. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. The other thing is we definitely, you know, we're always looking at our tech stack, the combination of tools that we're using, and are we using the right ones? So definitely an ongoing part of our strategy is to evaluate new tools that are coming, try them, integrate them, and, you know, eliminate ones which are not working for us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hopefully grow more is always my, you know, my number one thing. I think we've been working towards building the brand for 7 years now, mm-hmm. And I have a good team, and you know we're pretty stable, and so that hopefully can start to that accumulation effect can start to benefit us. I also really hope that with our position in Korea, as Korea continues to be more on the global stage and out there, that more companies will look to move into Korea and target Korea as their market, mm-hmm. and you know hope that we are the best placed to welcome them and help them to set up and grow their business.
And do you see RDI operating in another country rather than Korea or England?
As of now, no immediate plans, mm-hmm. As such. I think in the recruitment industry, there are these kind of networks that have kind of associations around different countries, and we're not a member of one of those. Also, you know, I am not looking to be the biggest agency out there. I think that it's very difficult once you go past a certain size to maintain the quality. Mm-hmm. So that's not our goal. Who knows? You know, in the future, if we have some really great potential partners, always willing to have a conversation.
Mm-hmm. And the final question that we make to all of our interviews, mm-hmm. what's the one source of learning that you like a lot? It can be a course, it can be a podcast, a book, an author, whatever that you like related to this topic could be nice.
I think for me, the thing that I always keep at the top of my mind is that it doesn't matter that I have been doing RDI for 7 years, or you know, I've been working for 17 years, or you know, or anything else which is kind of you know meaningful. The most important thing is that every day I can learn something new, and I just always want to learn something new and hope to learn something new. Mm-hmm. And if something comes along, I try to absorb it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just being that kind of sponge for
curious as well, no?
Curious and open-minded. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of benefits can be derived from seeing the crossover. So, you know, you might watch a horror movie, but there's something in it that, you know, a way in which something was said, or a negotiation, or even, you know, the way that something was arranged. There's always something that you can learn. And that's always what I'm kind of always going on in the back of my mind, is that I can always learn and apply something new to the business as much as possible. And hopefully that will create, you know, our unique identity as a company and organization, which will lead to our success.
Great, great, very great.
And do you somehow crystallize those learnings every day?
I mean, I'm always aware that to document those and to accumulate them and be able to refer back to them would be phenomenally valuable. And you know, there's journaling and there's you know, memos and there's these things. And the one thing I did do for a long time is a one-line diary. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to write a page every day. If I just satisfy with writing one line a day of the thing that I learned or what I did, that's enough. So I did do that for a long time. I'm not currently doing that.
I think I'm going to copy that. But I'm going to start doing that, yes.
Because it's just one line.
I liked it.
and you don't even have to handwrite it. You do it on your phone just before you go to bed. You have that memo. You just write one line. This is what I did, or the memorable thing. And it's just a reference.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe I need to get back to that.
Well, thank you so much, Gordon, for coming today. It was a pleasure. It was a really nice talk. We really enjoyed it. And for the audience, for the ones who are looking for a job in Korea, you know where you have to go. So yeah, I will leave the link in the description. And yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.